every prospect the Cubs call up has the nice eyes. Good evening, and welcome to episode 52 of Flags Fly Forever, Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I am your host, Brett Sayer, and with me, as always, is Mike Gianella and Mauricio Rubio. How are you guys doing on yet another Monday evening of recording?
Well, I was getting some Trevor Story updates and watching really bad minor league baseball feeds, so I'm doing all right.
Very nice.
You know, given the news and this weekend, and we'll get into this on the podcast, I think I'm doing okay.
Yeah, we're hanging in there. I think this is going to be a more this is going to be a more positive episode than this episode last year.
I meant to go listen to the Jose Fernandez episode from last year, and I didn't get around to it. I have a feeling that was a bad scene in terms of the way we sounded.
Yeah, it was. I think I blacked out for about an hour.
There was a lot of crying, actually, like big girl crying too. Like,
oh yeah, maybe. I'm sure, man.
Yeah, that's to be expected. So we had a show kind of planned for everybody, but since pitchers keep up in the dying, we are going to change that a little bit and talk about you know, the pitchers who are no longer with us for 2015 and what that should mean for your team if you own them, and what we think of a lot of the potential replacements out there. I think this is something that it's going to carry across a lot of different listeners, and you know, if you play in more than one league, you probably lost somebody this week, and it's no fun. So with that, you can read all of us at baseballperspectives.com. You can find us on Twitter. I am at Dynasty Guru. Mike is at Mike Gianella. That's G-I-A-N-E-L-L-A. Matt was at MRubio52. You can reach us via email as a podcast, flagsflyforever at baseballperspectives.com. And we ask that you rate and review us on the internet on things. First, as always, we're going to start off with Expert League Fab, and we are going to start with our league. Mike, tell us a little bit about what happened in mixed labor this week.
Well, the bad thing that happened, and this segues nicely into our topic, is we lost Adam Wainwright for the season. I'm trying to remember where we were when that happened, Brett. I think I saw the news about it, and I just saw it was like his ankle, or we weren't sure yet. It was early, and you were like, it might be an Achilles, and we're both like, ah, crap, because you know that's the Ryan Howard injury from the playoffs a few years ago, where it looked like he was shot in, you know, the back of the leg, and he just fell down.
Yeah.
And I mean, we all know now, because you know, by the time you're listening to this, by the time we're recording this, that's what happened. So they're hopeful Wainwright will be ready to go in spring training next year. But labor's a non-keeper, so we're done with him. And you know, that was the Jose Fernandez thing. With Jose Fernandez, we at least got, I think, you know what, seven starts. I'm trying to remember the exact number.
Yeah, it was about 60 innings, I think.
Yeah, and you know, with Wainwright, we're getting less. And I think the frustrating thing is that, you know, we took him at a point that was a little late, and you know, you were elated, Brett, and I was like, well, you know, that's solid, but he could be, you know, risky. He has the cartilage. I mean, for the innings he pitched, you were absolutely right in terms of the performance. So it's really frustrating to be right and then have him go down with a freak injury.
It is. you know, you almost, it, yeah, it's the same result either way.
Right.
Well, you know, it's tough to say whether, you know, whether that makes it worse that it wasn't an arm injury, then, you know, could have just said, oh, okay, I was wrong. I had too much faith that his elbow was healthy, but his elbow was healthy. And this just feels cruel. Not just because he's on our labor team, but because Adam Wainwright is one of my favorite pitchers in the universe to watch. It's sad as a baseball fan that I'm not going to get to see Adam Wainwright again this year. All the fantasy implications aside, but yeah. Move on we must. I guess we'll start with our move. We made a run at one of the starting pitchers who went for high single digits and made a run for one of the relievers that went for high single digits, but got neither and ended up going the high-end middle relief option in replacing Wainwright and picked up Cody Martin of the Braves, who's been very, very impressive so far this year. In, you know, obviously a still a small sample. So with that, I'll throw it over to Mike. Mike, you have any I guess thoughts on Martin first, and then we can kind of run down the rest of the labor mix moves.
Well, I think that, you know, we talked about it. You know, we've spent more than half our budget now because we got Jason Grilli, who so far has been solid, so we have to kind of be cautious. So, yeah, we put three on Jesse Chavez. I think he went for seven, which is, I think, what you and I predicted he would go for. We bid one on Tony Watson. He went to sleeper in the bus. Those guys are having a lot of trouble with their closers. I think they have Steve Cishek. And they speculated on Ken Giles and Brett Cecil, so things really are not working out for them. So the aggressive bid, I think, on Watson makes sense. For us, it really didn't, even though we could use a second guy. So, yeah, I like Martin. I always like the high strikeout, you know, option there. I like the play of we're rolling seven starters out there. He should be pretty safe. And I think the way Jim Johnson has pitched, that he's moved up in the pecking order if something did happen to Grilli. So it's kind of nice to have the guy who's likely to be the replacement.
Yeah, Jim Johnson has looked pretty terrible.
Recently. After last year. Yeah, well, and he looked terrible last year, too. So, you know, he had a nice week to start the season. I mean, he could be one of those guys that just kind of falls off the face.
Yeah.
The big guy in labor and, you know, I think in all the mixed leagues, and, you know, I'm really sorry if you're sick of hearing about him, although if you are, you don't like baseball and I don't like you, is Addison Russell. Addison Russell went for $34 to Doug Anderson of Fantasy Sports Network, and it was a really aggressive bid. The next highest bid was 17, and in fact, there were only four teams that bid. Now, I think it's kind of what's kind of interesting about that is that I think that's logical. Nick Schlein, in his write up about Russell made a comp to Xander Bogaerts, and I think from both a fantasy and a real life perspective that's a good comp. And what that tells me is you're talking about somebody who down the road is a potential future superstar, but for fantasy this year, you're even in 15 team mix, I think you're looking at a low end guy. He's a little bit better than Bogaerts because of the potential speed, but you're still looking at somebody who, even if everything hits this year, will be playable. He's not necessarily going to be great. I mean, that being said, in a league this deep with six-man reserves, I think if you're down toward the bottom of the standings like Doug is at the moment, I think it's a play that is worth making.
Yeah, and I think the other thing to note, which makes it a little different than a Bogaerts situation, is that while Russell is a fantastic prospect, and he is actually pretty polished for a prospect, so I think he can hold his own well enough to be a major leaguer right now. The Cubs do have a lot of options there, so if he doesn't get off to a great start, and Arismendi Alcantara, you know, starts hitting, you know, 400 with power and speed in AAA, or Javier Baez returns and starts, you know, making more contact than he was making last year, there's a lot of there's a lot of opportunity for different people at second base, and then a lot of spots for the Cubs, given the depth that they have. Right. So, you know, there's a little bit more risk there from a playing time standpoint, but you know, there's no questioning Russell's talent. He's fantastic.
Yeah, Mao, as a Chicagoan, do you have anything? I don't know if I'm butchering that. Do you have anything to add?
No, I mean, not really. I think that when you're, you know, he did get off to a slow start this year, and he's scuffling a little bit. I think a lot of people made a lot out of his contact rates down in AAA. You know, he was having an absurd sequence of at-bats where he didn't swing and miss at all, and people tried to assume that would carry over. It would explain some of the aggressive bids, like, you know, $30, I get it. Like, if you're really looking for a second baseman, that's a play that you make, and I understand that, but probably would have been in the 15 to 17 range.
Yeah, and I think Doug's middle infielders are Jed Jerko, Brad Miller, and Stephen Drew.
Yeah, so you go and you bid 30 to 40 on Addison Russell. Like, I understand it at that point. Like, it's just...
that's what it is. I mean, we have, you know, we have Tulo, Desmond, and Brett Lowry, and, you know, could Russell be better than Lowry? He could, but it's not really something I would put a big bet on, even if I believe that.
Yeah, Major League Baseball's hard. It's real hard.
Yeah, I say that all the time. Anything else on Russell before we move on to the next guy?
He's got a weird body, right? Like, it's weird. Like, it's broad, but it's skinny. Like, it's weird. Fun.
I have a weird observation about him that I'm just going to keep to myself because it's really weird. I'll tell you offline.
Okay.
He's also every prospect the Cubs call up has the nice eyes.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
He is good looking.
Yeah. No, he's got the good face.
Spirit into weird territory. The next guy is Jimmy Paredes of the Orioles. $12. Next highest bid was $4. He's gotten off to a great start. Steve Pierce isn't hitting. The Orioles are going with the hot bat. I think Paredes has 3 home runs. I kind of have mixed feelings about this bid. This is Jake Seeley of Roto Experts, and I mean, his team is really suffering. If you follow him on Twitter at AllenKins, you'll probably hear about all of his injuries and woes, like, a lot. So you probably know what's going on with him. He's lost, like, a lot of players. So he probably feels that need to kind of, you know, hope to catch lightning in a bottle. And, you know, that's kind of a theme right now. It seems early in labor, but, you know, we're kind of past that 1/10 point. I think some teams are looking a little at it like, well, the guys that I get in April are the guys that are going to make more of an impact if I just kind of sit around and wait until June. And, you know, we saw this with our labor team last year, Brett. You know, by the time June came around, it was just too late. And you know, Jay could be in that position given the injuries that he's had.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's early, but it's not that early anymore.
I think you just put a title on our show.
Maybe.
But yeah, I think that's the idea, and whether Russell is that guy, I think the idea is sound. The problem with Russell though is that in this situation he doesn't have the kind of upside that I think a $30 to $40 bid dictates in a mixed league.
Well, you know, I make this point in the column, which I didn't have time to send you, but last year in only, Bogaerts earned 10. In mixed, he earned 3. And he was barely a 204th best hitter in mixed. In a mixed, you have 210 hitters. So, yeah, even with that speed bump, he could be a little bit higher than Bogaerts was. But that's exactly right. You're talking about a guy who is going to probably be a back end of the roster player. Now, I get the proposition with great prospects or great players that they sometimes exceed expectations and they sometimes go off, you know, for enough stretches. You know, we saw with George Springer last year before he got hurt that they defy the expectations. But I completely agree with you, Brett. I think it's kind of a poor play to get too excited.
Yeah. But back to Jimmy Paredes, who I realized I just went right back to Addison Russell.
I got confused, we were talking about. That's Paredes. Fine. We could talk about Russell all night if you want.
We probably could. I'm just gonna say no on Paredes. I don't like these kinds of bids on players like this, guys who have been around for, you know, quite a while and have shown that they are not this type of hitter. There are always going to be exceptions, and as the guy that he's taking playing time away from was the exception last year, and that was Steve Pierce. But chasing after players like that is going to lead to heartbreak much more often than is going to lead to anything that you're going to want to keep on your roster for a while.
I love it. That's apt.
That's it. That is it.
Yeah. So let's see. There were three catchers. Kevin Plawecki went for $8. Kurt Suzuki went for $8. And Martin Maldonado went for $3. Our friend Beef went for $1, but I'm just kind of focusing on guys that went for more than $1. You know, it's interesting to me here. You've got kind of the profile of Plawecki, who I think has the most upside, but could be in the lineup the least amount of time. And I think there's a good chance he gets sent down once Travis d'Arnaud's healthy. I don't think they're going to like leave Plawecki on the bench. And you got Suzuki, who really is just going to be that boring kind of grinder, station to station type player who scores some runs, drives him some runs, doesn't do much else. You hope he doesn't hurt his average. Let me ask you, Brett, in this format, who do you prefer? Do you prefer, at the same bid price in this instance, you prefer Plawecki or do you prefer Suzuki?
Give me Plawecki, because I feel like I could find someone after Plawecki gets sent back down to take back over and be better than Suzuki over the remainder of the season.
Yeah, and you know, if not, you throw $1 on a guy like Beef and you hope you get another week or two of, you know, a home run or two here and there and getting to say, I own Beef.
Yeah, exactly. I'd rather roll Wellington Castillo out there right now than Kurt Suzuki in a mixed league.
They're trying him out at third. Catch mixed league, which is funny.
What?
They're trying him out at third, which is funny.
Yes. I saw those pictures.
He was taking some reps over there in practice, just working on the positional flexibility. I guess he's getting called up soon, right?
Yeah.
So let's see who else is there. There were some pitchers. We mentioned Jesse Chavez. He went for $7. He's replacing Kendall Graven in the rotation. I think he's fine for deep mixed. The ceiling's not high, but the floor is not low, so he should be kind of okay as a back end dude.
Yeah. The problem with Chavez is that he's not going to be in that rotation in July.
Oh no.
Unless something really terrible happens, he's not going to. The A's have two guys that are on the way back who should be back before the end of May. They have Jared Parker, who's returning from Tommy John surgery, and they have Sean Nolan, who is the guy who they also got from the Blue Jays this offseason in the Josh Donaldson deal, who was recovering from hernia surgery but is about to start a rehab assignment. He is essentially what people thought Kendall Graveman was, but he's not. That was not clear, was it?
No, Graveman is not the guy that everybody thought Graveman was going to be, right?
Yes. Yes.
I knew what Brett meant.
Yeah, Graveman, not good. Sean Nolan could be good. I like Sean Nolan. I like Sean Nolan. But yeah, for right now, I like Jesse Chavez.
I'm on the Nolan train, too. But
I like Nolan as well. And you know, it's funny. I mean, Graveman's just one of those guys that everybody was kind of starting to really hype up. And I think I was in agreement with you guys where I'm like, yeah, you know, we talked about him on the pod. I was like, I see him as a 5 maybe, but it just seems to be stretching things to kind of push him up to like a 3. And I think that's what people were doing. And, you know, watching him like in, you know, when he was actually up, he just didn't have a lot of stuff when, you know, things weren't going well for him. You could just kind of see it.
It's a tough profile. It's a very tough profile.
It really is. So, yeah, you know, there are a couple other pitchers. Kyle Loesch, who I think was drafted, was dropped pretty quickly after his, you know, awful start. He went for $8. You know, I think that's fine. Trevor May went for $4. And Jorge De La Rosa went for $3. He's got a start at Petco this week, which, you know, is kind of nice. And I think he's a good guy in a league like this with the flexible reserves to kind of stream on the road starts. Any thoughts on any of those guys? I know we don't want to go through every single one of these players. I'm just kind of hitting the positions here.
Yeah, May has looked better than I thought he was going to look. He's got a nifty little strikeout to walk ratio. I think he's at 13 strikeouts and 2 walks on the season. But the problem with May is that I don't think he will have a job when Ricky Nolasco comes back. I don't know if he's going to stick, which is a problem. And Nolasco is maybe a start or two away from getting back. So
and he's got a big contract. They're not going to ditch Nolasco.
No, and he's a Twins kind of guy.
Yeah, unfortunately,
not to stereotype Twins guys, but yeah,
not all Twins. Yeah, I know. It was a bad day on Twitter. It's a bad day on the pod. It just carries over, man. So, outfielders, Juan Lagares and Andre Ethier each went for 3. I think they're both interesting. I really like Lagares. I think that, and I think we've talked about him on the show before. I think there's a little pop here. There's a little speed. He's not super, but as kind of a fifth outfielder utility and 15-team mix, I think he's fine. And Ethier should get a lot of at-bats with Yasiel Puig out, although Alex Guerrero at some point you have to think has to, start getting his reps in somewhere.
Yeah, you would think so, but there are a lot of reasons not to play Alex Guerrero even when he's hitting. It just depends on what their tolerance is for that kind of defense.
Yeah, but, that's true.
I mean, he's also Alex Guerrero is as excited as some people are getting about Alex Guerrero. He's not this kind of hitter.
That's true.
He's good with the bat, but he's not 330 homer guy if he gets plugged into the lineup, which is what some could extrapolate that into.
Yeah. What do you think? 15, a little bit better than that. I mean, what's the realistic home run expectation on him if he played every day?
I think the power is real. I think it's 20 homer power.
20, yeah, that makes sense to me.
I think the batting average would suffer over an extended showing at the major league level. So I think he's more of a 260, 270 guy, and there's tons of value in a 260, 270 hitter with 20 home run power. But it's he's not going to be a game changer if he gets full time at bats.
Not in this format. Yeah, I think in only if you stash him late, like friend of the show Tristan Cockcroft did in Tout Wars NL, he could work out great at that price. But yeah, I think in the labor format, he's still kind of a back end dude. Well, here's a question that this year. So Mao and Brett, who do you think at the end of the season will have more value in labor mix in this 15-team format? Addison Russell or Alex Guerrero?
Alex Guerrero.
I'm putting you on the spot, man.
I'm going to go with Addison Russell, even though I'm going to go with Russell.
Russell the thing is that Russell is so much better of a player, it's not even funny. But
I know
it just in terms of roto value. Yeah, I think it's close, but I think it's Guerrero. And that's even with the fact that I don't think Guerrero is going to get get any sort of consistent playing time. If he's in that, sort of Scott Vance like ish kind of role where his numbers look really good, but he's only playing, a handful of games a week. It's interesting, but it's not exactly a recipe for huge value.
It obviously depends on the role, and I think that's the thing. I think I mentioned this last week. I see the Dodger beat writers on Twitter keep getting asked about, Uribe versus Guerrero, and they're all alluding to what you talked about, the defense, or like it's just not going to happen on a regular basis. It's just not something the Dodgers seem inclined at all to do.
No, and there's really nowhere you can put Guerrero where Right. He won't hurt you. That's the problem. It's not like you could put him in left field and he'd
can't
be
put
fine.
Him. You can't put him at first base because you have Adrian Gonzalez. So even if you're, you know, thinking that, that's not happening.
I don't even. I think he'd be even a below average first baseman. He's
he probably
he's not.
He probably would.
He's a born designated hitter. I mean, if he was in the American League and DHing, then bully for him and his owners. But that, you know, it's not.
It'll be fun. It'll be funny to watch every once in a while. See him kind of roaming out there, trying to.
Oh sure. Oh yeah, yeah. I agree.
But you're right. Like the playing time is just going to be really. I think that for me, like coming down on the Russell side, like you know, I can certainly see and envision the scenario where Guerrero is more valuable for sure. Like you know, because at this point he's probably the better roto player. But I'm willing to bet on the talent and I just think that Russell might earn more playing time than Guerrero will. So, you know, it's tight, but that's just kind of where I come down on it.
Well, it's certainly close. I kind of lean Guerrero, but I do agree that, you know, Guerrero, if he gets like 300 at, you know, at bats or 350 plate appearances, that's where it's at. And I agree that it's possible that that might not happen.
Yeah.
So should we move to the NL and tout? And I can tell you of the marginal things I did and what happened. It was pretty quiet.
Yep. Sounds good.
Okay. So really, Ilian Herrera went for 7 to Tristan Cockcroft of ESPN. He had Scooter Gennett, so that bid kind of, you know, makes some sense for him. And Tristan's usually very conservative this time of year, so he had a lot of money stockpiled. Probably the more interesting bid, just because of the timing of it, was John Axford. Peter Kreutzer, Rotoman, got him for 7. He bid 10 with Vickery. I'm not kicking myself exactly, but I did kind of see a little bit of the news on Adam Ottavino that he had a sore, you know, was it a biceps or triceps? I'm like blanking on it now. But he went on the DL today after the transaction deadline. So there's a good chance John Axford's going to, you know, have the opportunity to pick up some saves. So even if he doesn't hold on to the job, That was a kind of a nice little play there by Peter.
Yeah. Those are the kind of pickups that really help you a little bit along the way.
Yep. Yeah. My guy is you know, Ramos on the Marlins, who I have stashed in Tout Wars, and I'm hoping, you know, get some saves for me.
Yeah, he certainly looks like he is in position to do that.
Yeah, Steve Cishek doesn't look good. And then there were a couple of starting pitchers. Eddie Butler. So Lenny Melnick lost Adam Wainwright, and he kind of got semi-aggressive on a couple guys. He bid 6 on Eddie Butler. I was the only other person to bid. I bid 4, so with Vickery, he got him for 5. And he bid 10 on Eric Stoltz. The only other bid was 3, so he got him for 4. So he's kind of going with the quantity over quality approach to replace Wainwright, at least in the short term. Butler is on the road this week. I believe he gets a Petco start, so that's pretty solid. Stoltz has a 2-star week. I think he actually – I'm going to go look at the line, but the last I looked, he was fairly decent tonight. Then he gets another start against the Reds. So – I kind of am wondering how you feel about this, and this can, you know, we're going to talk about this a little bit more later, but do you like the strategy of going out and getting a couple of guys like this, or when you lose a Wainwright, or do you exhibit a little more patience if you're in a deeper league?
I'm much more inclined to exhibit patience when losing someone who's as good as Wainwright, especially if it's someone like him who I'm counting on to be a key contributor in the ratio categories. It's really, really hard to replace ratios on the waiver wire in a deep league. You can replace strikeouts. It's not easy to replace strikeouts, but you can do it. You can replace it with bulk, but you can't do the same with ratios, just not in the same way. Even if you get a reliever who is capable of putting up Wainwright type ratios, you're talking about someone who's going to pitch maybe a third of the innings if you're lucky. So it's a huge blow. There's no question about it. You just have to you have to know your team and you have to pick a direction and go with it. I mean, we experienced this last year, and we talked about it on the podcast. We talked about the two directions that we could have gone in when we lost Jose Fernandez, and it's essentially those two divergent paths. You go the ratio path, you go the strikeout path, or the win and strikeout path, and it really depends what the rest of your roster can handle. Last year we did not have the pitching behind Jose Fernandez to be able to care about ratios. This year we do, after losing Adam Wainwright. It's a different situation. So, it's really about knowing the pitchers that you have and what you are capable of with the 8-man staff sans the guy who's out for the year.
No, I agree with all that. You know, it's easy to dig a hole in WHIP and ERA, and when you do that, it's almost impossible. Even if you find that lightning in a bottle guy, it's impossible to dig it back. And even in this era of so much good pitching, guys like Stultz are just really dangerous to your team if you leave them in there for too long.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you can get very, very exposed that way.
Yep. So let's see. I think that was pretty much it on the significant bids in the NL. So, yeah, I lost on Butler. I lost on Axford. I took Tony Cruz for zero just because Yadi Molina has been missing a little bit of time. And I had Willam Rosario get sent down, so I just kind of wanted to get a body in there. That was pretty much it for me. I kind of had a quiet week. Maybe I should have bid more on Axford, but we'll see how that works out.
Yeah. I'm actually curious to get – before we move on from this, I'm curious, Mao, to get your thoughts on Eddie Butler. I think Mike and I have kind of talked about Butler a lot in our own conversations this year. I'm a little bit of a believer in his deep league value, and I think Mike's starting to come around on that a little bit. But where, you were with us, you saw him in spring training, and you've seen him throughout the minors and how he's progressed. So Where are you falling on his current value right now?
Well, I think that when you're talking about getting Eddie Butler in an NL, in a deep league like this where it's NL only, I think this is fine. I mean, the bid that was put out for him, I would have been on the same train with him. I think that he's probably got a little bit of a slow burn developmental wise. But I mean, I like the stuff. I don't think it's as high as I thought it was in the past, but I think he's still going to be a viable user and certainly someone that you're going to be able to use in, NL only. But when you kind of set up the question like that, I'm kind of curious, Mike, about why are you down on him?
I'm not down on him. I just the Colorado I don't like, and I know he has a ground ball profile, but almost every young pitcher tends to struggle in Colorado. It's just such a tough place to pitch, not just because of the air, but mentally. It's just tough. You always hear these stories of guys thinking, Mike Hampton and Denny Nagel signing the big contracts years ago, going, I can pitch there, I can do it. It just wears a pitcher down. There's very few examples of sustained success there. I'm glad I said that correctly. The other thing, is that in Tout Wars, it's a 4-man reserve. So it's kind of a tough road with a guy like Butler to stream him. Labor with the deeper reserves in the mix make it a little bit easier to play that game. And, for me in Tout Wars, I had Russell. He's up now. I have Noah Syndergaard, who I'd rather keep. He actually looked great tonight, according to a number of people on social media. So hopefully, it's a sign that whatever was bothering him is behind him. I just like to kind of stream those spots for other guys. You can't have too many of the Butler streamers. And I already have Tim Lincecum and Travis Woods, so I want to be careful, particularly with Lincecum, of not just leaving him in there every week. So that's some of the thinking. It's not just Butler. It's the way this league plays as well.
Yeah, and, you know, it's you know, I was a fan of Butler pretty early on in the developmental process, and I thought that, you know, if all of his pitches came along the way that I thought that they would, that, you know, by now he'd be going for like $40 or $50 whenever he got the call, or he'd be a reserve or a spec pick in auctions before the season. But, you know, at this point, when I really start to think about the player, you know, I think of him more as like an SP4 right now, which, you know, I think that he's going to be usable, and I think that every once in a while he's going to show you a little bit where, you know, the slider really tightens up, or every so often the change is really working. So,
I think right now the walks are scaring people. You know, he's got a high walk to inning ratio, a poor K walk ratio. I think that's kind of scaring. I know it's a small sample, but I think that's scaring people off a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, and I get that. It's just, you know, I'm compromised here because I really like the player. So
yeah, I know you guys on the scouting side like him, I think, more than the roto or the fantasy guys like me do.
I'm actually kind of curious to see what the difference is there, because it's, you know, Butler's a guy who's, you know, the big secondary pitch for him was a slider, and it kind of flattened out recently. So, you know, if you like Butler, you really buy into the change. So I am actually curious to see what the split would be there if we sent out an email. But I mean, I like him. I like him.
Yeah, I mean, he's thrown. You can tell by his pitch usage. I mean, he throws either his four seamer or his two seamer most of the time. He throws one of the two about 63% of the time. And the pitch he's been using the most outside of that has been the changeup, and that's been the pitch he's been developing in the system for a couple of years now. I mean, the slider was the bread and butter pitch. The slider is what got everyone's trousers tight at the Futures game in 2013. And it's whether it's still kind of there in that form, I don't know. I mean, it hasn't flashed like that for a little while. But the thing with Butler is that he has the profile of a guy who can succeed despite being in Colorado. He just needs to get there. And on natural talent, I think he can get there, and I think it's going to be bumpy. But I think by the end of the year, he will be worth owning in deep mix leagues.
Yep, agree.
So that's probably enough Eddie Butler talk for everybody.
Yeah, I was going to save him for us.
It's Thank you little... for listening to the Eddie Butler Hour.
Even for us, it's a little wonky. Yeah. So I chose Towers AL this week because I've been alternating, and it was really quiet. There was an interesting Vickery bid on Paredes, who we've already talked about. Jeff Erickson of RotoWire bid 37. The only other bid was 8, so we got him for 9. So, you know, it's kind of funny. On the one hand, I like the aggressiveness of the bid, but there's just the risk behind Vickery that if somebody else decided to be aggressive and said, I'll bid 25, Erickson would have been caught with a $26 bid on Paredes. Now, it's AL only, so it's a little bit different. And, you know, even if Paredes, like, slides back into a part-time role, you know, he could still be, like, worth something. There's just a lot of risk there if somebody, you know, comes in with that, like, also semi-aggressive bid and you get stuck with him. But that's part of the fun of Vickery, actually.
Yeah, that would be the thing I would be most worried about in making a bid like that. But it certainly worked out for Jeff. And yeah, in an AL-only league, this sort of bid for Paredes makes total sense as opposed to a mixed league. Because if he's, you know, if he's just hitting for another week or so and then kind of struggles and then settles back into a reserve role, which I think he's earned at this point. Paredes, who plays, you know, 3 days a week, is still a viable starter in an AL only league if you're struggling with depth a little bit. So yeah. It's definitely a different scenario. I mean, if he's not playing every day and hitting the way he's hitting now, he's waiver wire material in every mixed league. But not in an only.
Yep.
The one. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, it was just really quiet in the AL. I mean, the only other aggressive bid that was also brought down by Vickery was Eduardo Nunez, who Larry Schechter bid 12 and got him for two. And I think the thinking with Nunez is a lot of Twins aren't hitting, and Nunez is actually DHing tonight on Monday as we're recording this. And even if he doesn't start, he could get a bunch of at-bats at a bunch of different positions. Including for Kenneth Vargas, who, you know, is our colleague Greg Goldstein's boyfriend, who so far hasn't really worked out. That's Vargas, not Goldstein.
Yes, and see, this is the beautiful thing about being, chasing stats with Paredes is fine. And you know what you're getting into, but can anyone say with any sort of conviction that Paredes will be better than Eduardo Nunez for the next week, for the next month, for the next year?
No, I can't go there. I can't go there.
He probably has a slightly better chance at the power, but yeah, they're so variable. And if anything, the Orioles have a better team in theory in terms of the guys they have. I don't think Steve Pierce is completely finished. And the Twins have a lot of players that Nunez could slide in for. And I mean, Danny Santana has been really bad. It isn't out of the question that he, you know, gets sent back down at some point and Nunez slides in for a couple weeks.
Yeah, well, I hate to say it like this, but we told you guys about Danny Santana. I mean,
I know.
That was a disaster waiting.
It was Santana and Baez, and you know, we had our long discussion about Baez, and they both were going really high, and you know, it's just so tough with guys like that to take them that high. You know, Chris Bryant went high too, but I think that was just a different story because we all knew he was going to be back in like 2 or 3 weeks, and I mean, I have to say he's looked great.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. So do you guys have anything else on the AL? You know, I guess one guy I want to ask about is there any hope at all for even in an AL only for Wandy Rodriguez?
A little, but not much. It's okay at a dollar, I think. It's just okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to say no. I don't like it.
Yeah,
I'm
fine with it at a dollar. I think that you stash him, maybe you play him for the road starts. Although again, this goes back to what I talked about with Butler, with four reserves. Wandy's kind of really iffy with that.
Yeah, Wandy's definitely on the bubble for this. Like, definitely. Like, it's just okay. And then we're talking about like a dollar bid. Like, it's just okay. But I want to ask, why are people still paying money for Eric Sogard?
Because he plays.
He'll play. He'll probably steal a few bases. Well, you know what? In only, he's kind of like the Nick Punto now. He's the guy who everybody looks at and goes, ugh, you know, I can't stand him. He's not a good, you know, roto player, fantasy player. And at the end of the year, you look at his line in AL only, you're like, wow, he earned like $8 or $9. How did he do that? That's what it is. He's just a boring guy that is going to earn.
It's the glasses. It's the Hershiser glasses.
Face of MLB.
He and his wife, when I see the pictures of them, they're just like the cutest looking couple with the they're just adorable couple.
I don't think I've seen that picture.
Well, I got to find that for you.
Yeah.
So is that it on
this
the staff?
This could be like the super lame version of what the Ben and Sam do on Effectively Wild when they send each other Angelton Simmons clips to watch while they record.
You send pictures of
Eric Sogard and his wife to look at while we record.
No, I'm all right.
Yeah. So with that, let's move on. Mao, should we take a break or should we plow right through?
Let's take a little break and then let's come back.
All right. We're going to take a break. You heard, Mal. Go clean yourselves up. We'll be right back. Welcome back to episode 52 of Flags Fly Forever, Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I am your host. I don't need to do that again. You know who I am. You know who we are. Let's talk about pitchers. We said we were going to talk about this before. Since the last time we spoke, and well, honestly, since like 3 days ago, fantasy owners have lost Adam Wainwright, Brandon McCarthy, and what looks like Homer Bailey. That is not officially confirmed yet, but it looks like he may need Tommy John surgery as well. So they appear to be all done for the season. And obviously Wainwright was much costlier than the other two, but it is leaving pretty much everybody scrambling to replace starters off of the waiver wire. So what we're going to do is we're going to sort of break down by league size and go with some ownership mile markers as we go through pitchers who might be available in your league and talk about some of the ones that we find interesting and sort of where the breaking point is, where we replace with starters, where we would replace with relievers, and who some of those names would be. So, in a shallower mixed, like a 10 or 12 team mixed, I figure these pitchers who are roughly 25 to 40 or so percent owned are probably going to be available for some people, or if they're not available, they might make interesting trade targets. So let's kind of start at the top. Drew Hutchison was a little bit of a trendy sleeper coming into the season. He's owned in 35% of leagues. He's got a 5.48 ERA so far, but a much more manageable 1.17 WHIP. He's got the strikeouts like he was doing last year, so it's pretty much he's doing pretty much what he was doing last year, not taking that step forward. Mike, how do you feel about Hutchison, and is he someone who you think can live up to that preseason hype?
Well, you know, Hutchison's funny because he's one of those guys I wasn't quite as high on as everyone else was. I liked him. I just didn't see him as the guy who was going to take the next big step, all capital letters. So I kind of agree. I look at him. I think the peripherals are a little bit better than the ERA. I would trust him in this format. I just wouldn't have the same high level of expectations that some had at the beginning of the season. I think he makes for a decent pickup, but he's not going to necessarily come close to being an anchor guy.
I agree. He's the thing that's nice about Hutchison is that he has a little bit of a cap in WHIP. He's not someone who's going to go out there and struggle and put up a 1.4, 1.45. I don't think that's a likely outcome even if he's not great. So there's certainly ERA risk, and you expect that in Toronto, but it's easier to get a little bit lucky with ERA than it is to get a little lucky with WHIP.
My main concern with Hutchinson is that he really loves giving up the home run ball. So, but other than that, I think that that's a risk management thing, and I think you hit it on the head, Mike. But
Every once in a while, I'll do that.
So let's talk about another pitcher who is also 35% owned, and his ownership is trending in the other direction. That is Hector Santiago of the Angels. He's looked pretty sharp so far this year. In fact, so far this year, he's looked exactly like the pitcher who I think people thought he was going to be coming out of spring training last year. I was a bit high on him out of spring training last year, and that was a bit of a disappointment. You know, he's someone who kind of stuck around on my radar as a late flyer this year, and he's been pretty solid. He unlike Hutchison, Santiago carries huge whip risk, But his ERA risk is pretty muted. He's sort of the opposite. He's already walked 12 batters in 23 and two-thirds innings. I don't think that rate is going to get any better over the course of the season, but he can survive that way, especially in LA with a nice ballpark and a strong defense. So, Mike, what do you think about Santiago? Do you prefer Santiago to Hutchinson if someone is looking at both guys?
No, I definitely still want Hutchinson. I like Santiago. I think he can play in like a deeper mix. He can certainly play in an only. I just see a lot of, you know, it's early, it's small sample, but I see a lot of warning flags, like in terms of the BABIP, in terms of the FIP, you know, in terms of the walks per nine. I don't see too much here in the profile that has really changed a lot. I think he had some bad luck last year. I think he's having some really good luck early. You know, we know that. You know, we know he's not going to put up a 2.28. But, you know, when you know, I'm not a huge believer in FIP, but when the difference is over two and he's got a 4.62, it just screams to me that there's a lot of correction coming.
Yeah, I prefer Hutchinson as well, but I do think Santiago is a worthwhile investment.
I agree with you about the park. The park will mitigate that, you know, quite a bit. It you know, mitigated it for Shoemaker last year, who, you know, we kind of know isn't really that great, but it helped him. It's helped Jared Weaver's, his velocity continues to decline. It will help Santiago.
Yeah, and the nice thing is that Santiago, with what's happening around him, it looks like Santiago's got a little bit more job security than it looked like he was going to have at the beginning of the year. I mean, it looked like it was going to be him essentially competing for his rotation spot out of the gate with Andrew Heaney, who's waiting in the wings. But Matt Shoemaker is just freaking awful.
Yeah, he's been bad.
That is a bad scene.
Yeah, I was wrong about him. I thought he would hold up, but he looks like he looks quad A. I mean, there's just no other way to put it.
Yeah. So that is
shades of Dave Island, if you're old enough to remember him.
Oh man,
that's rough.
Oof.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna group these next two guys together. Since they're a little bit further down, now we're starting to talk about maybe probably guys that are still only available in 12-team leagues, but two AL East pitchers in CC Sabathia and Miguel Gonzalez. Gonzalez has been surprising with his strikeouts early this season, and he's been pretty good. Sabathia has been a little bit of a FIP or either FIP or an ex-FIP superstar so far, but he has not pitched well. So if you Mal, if you had to choose between one of these two guys to go with off the waiver wire, who would you pick?
Ooh, this is not a good choice for me. I'm going to go with Miguel Gonzalez because I you know, as much as I've loved CC in the past, and as much as I really appreciate what he did as a pitcher over the entirety of his career, I just don't like it right now. I think that he's not going to get back to form. I don't think that this is a pitcher that I feel comfortable with having in my rotation. Yet, in the fact that Miguel Gonzalez is also Mexican, and I think this is a really easy pick for me.
Mike, what about you?
I'm extremely jealous of Mauricio's accent and wish that my dad's Argentine accent had passed on to me and not my mom's like English Irish like bland voice. But beyond all of that, I would agree with Mao. I want Gonzalez. I've watched a couple of the CC starts and he just doesn't have it. He just really, on the bad days like he had the other day against the Mets, the ball's coming in flat. It's not just the velocity, it's the lack of location, it's the lack of movement. I think on a good day for CC, you're kind of looking at a guy who's going to give up like three runs in six innings and eke out the quality start. Gonzalez isn't a lot better than that, but he is better. And I think he also has the defense behind him that will kind of support him a little bit. I agree with Mal. This is a bit of a rough choice, but if I have to make it, I'm going to go with, and I'm not going to try to pronounce it the way Mal did, with Gonzalez.
Yeah, I'm with you guys on this. I think I'm a little bit more optimistic that Sabathia can be usable in that sort of format, but Gonzalez has looked good. He's looked deceivingly good this year, and I think he's even in that park. I think he is he's someone who could kind of sneak up on people and be really solid. So let's trek even further down this list, down 24% and 23% owned respectively. We have two more AL East pitchers. These two with big fastballs. Joe Kelly and Nate Eovaldi. One is they can get looped together for a number of reasons, but Mike, if you had to choose between those two, who would you pick, and would you take either of them over Miguel Gonzalez?
Oh man, this is a switch from to the first question. This is a switch from my preseason rank. I would take Kelly over Eovaldi. I think that Kelly, the extra oomph and velocity has really helped him quite a bit. There's also a little bit more movement there, so he's not just somebody who's, you know, kind of throwing hard, like pumping it in and not doing much else. He's someone the other way. He's had some really bad luck with the strand rate. I think that's going to improve. I also don't think he's more of a ground ball guy than he's been this year. I think that will improve as well. Eovaldi, you know, kind of similar to what's going on with, you know, Sabathia. You're talking about somebody who's really just almost the opposite of that spectrum. He's throwing the fastball. It's a hard ball. He's not really doing much else. The breaking stuff, I thought it would be more refined based on what I had heard in spring training. It's not. Kelly just looks like more of a pitcher. To answer the other question, I think it's format dependent. I think that if you are in a league where it's a deeper league and you're looking for stability, I think you want Gonzalez, a little less risk. I honestly think that if you're in a shallower mixed or even a deeper mixed, you might make the play on Kelly just because there's more ceiling there. And I think you can find guys like Gonzalez in that standard mixed out in the pool anyway.
Yeah. I'm with you on Kelly. I think it's going to be a strong season for him. The velocity does seem to suit his game pretty well, and it's a really tough park, but that is quite an offense behind him, even if it's also quite a defense behind him. I could certainly see him winning 16 to 18 games, even if he does not improve at all over the course of the season, given what that team is capable of. Yep. I would take Kelly over. I think I would take Kelly over Gonzalez across formats. I think there's more upside there. And as much as I like Miguel Gonzalez, I think he's going to settle into more of a replacement level guy in those kind of mixed leagues.
Yeah, are people still trying to make the Nate Eovaldi thing happen?
Oh no.
Okay, cool. Because I
well, which people?
Well, there was a particular subset of perhaps a BP readership, I think, that constantly comments on Eovaldi articles.
Well, there's a certain website, and I won't mention them, but they're often considered a competitor of Baseball Prospectuses that kind of always pumps guys up in the preseason, and they pumped up Eovaldi, and then when he doesn't do well, they just kind of disappear, and it's never addressed again.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, you know,
I won't mention any names, but yeah.
Even regardless of that, like, it's, you know, I watch him, and I want to like him, and then he gives up, like, 31 hits in 21 innings, and it's just like... When you really look at his arsenal and you kind of dissect it, it's like this should work, but he just doesn't make it work.
It's all fastball, and the fastball doesn't have a lot of movement. You know, if you think about, like, and I'm not even comparing these two pitchers, but when you watch like Gerrit Cole versus Eovaldi, Eovaldi has this like fast fastball that doesn't do much. Cole, and you've seen it this year, that fastball is starting to like just kind of blow up at the end. So even though it isn't moving a lot, it's coming in with so much of that explosion at the end of the pitch that's where it is. So if you're throwing that hard like fastball, you got to have a little bit more of that like oomph on the back end. And Eovaldi doesn't even have that.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, comparing anyone to Cole is going to leave them a little out in the dry.
I'm just thinking about the fact that Cole's the readings aren't that much higher than Eovaldi's. There's just a difference in the pitch that was my
Armside runs a real thing. That's sexy bore. It's good.
Yeah. And we've seen a lot more of that from Cole this year. I think I'm just gratuitously talking about Cole so we can feel better about Wainwright.
we can have a Gerrit Cole podcast coming up soon if you want.
I could do that.
Yeah, we could do that.
Yeah. But let's go down a little bit further, and we'll kind of the rest of these guys in this sort of 10 to 15% ownership range. I just want to see whether you feel like they belong in the sort of Miguel Gonzalez, Joe Kelly class, or if you think that they are lower down on the spectrum, guys we shouldn't necessarily worry about right now in your non-deep mix league. Brandon Morrow is owned in 15% of leagues and has looked quite good so far this year. Of course, he's also Brandon Morrow, and he could just spontaneously combust at any moment. Does Morrow fit in with that group, Mike?
Yes, and Morrow's a guy who, you know, the strikeouts are down, but we're talking about a small sample. But Morrow's a guy who should be owned as long as he's healthy. He's pitching in Petco. He should be owned everywhere. I don't know why that ownership percentage is so low. I get it. I guess it matters if you're in a league where the reserve rules are strict and you can't, play around. He should be owned in many more places, and he definitely belongs up there.
Okay. We'll alternate off. I just for really quickly, I would take Morrow over any of those guys that we've talked about so far.
Including Hutchison.
I would take him over all of them and then worry about it when he gets hurt.
I might take Hutchison over Morrow. I think otherwise I'm with you.
I would take Morrow over Hutchison, and then I would cry about it at night because he's burned me so many times.
Yeah, he burned me too.
That's true. So let's talk about two more boring pitchers and talk about Dan Haran and Mike Leake. Any of them interest you in that sort of way?
I mean, to be honest, like I kind of forgot Dan Haran was pitching because I totally thought he would retire.
That's rough.
That is rough.
But like, I mean, if we're being honest, like he's just
Haran's been really, really lucky. I mean, he's doing his Dan Haran thing, where the strikeout rate has declined for a second year in a row. The home runs are up. You know, people are always like, oh, you know, his XFIP is good. It's like, well, his XFIP is good because every once in a while he throws a cookie and it gets hit like 1,000 miles.
Yeah.
So
his regular FIP is terrible.
Yeah, it is. He's just an accident waiting to happen. He just really is. And it sucks because I used to love Dan Haran. He used to be such a great guy to have on your team, and he's just not that guy.
Hey, man, everyone retires, right? Like, I don't.
It's a sad story of Brandon Webb is what it is. I mean, Brandon Webb was on a Hall of Fame trajectory, and you know, just the shoulder went, and that was it.
Yeah, the shoulder can't go. It just can't. So I'm obviously out on Haran, but I'm curious to hear what you have to say, Brett.
I'm not excited about Haran in anything but a really deep mix league. In a really deep mix league, I think he's fine. But I'd rather own a whole bunch of other guys than him.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to throw out a couple of quick names. We don't need to go through all of these guys just because we don't want to go on for hours and hours. But Jason Hamill looked great against the Pirates. Were they playing the Pirates tonight? They were playing the Pirates tonight, right? Yeah, he looked great against the Pirates. His ownership is going to jump. He's at 9.5% now. I'd expect that to be closer to 20% in another week. And I think that is, I think that's valid. I think I'd have him up in that, that first tier that we talked about.
I agree.
The next guy, same rotation, Travis Wood. Just give me on a scale of 1 to 10. I know you guys both love Travis Wood. Where are you in excitement on your Travis Wood scale?
Don't make me do this.
Put like, a high number on it. I know you want to.
Tell me where you are. Put a number on it.
What's 1 to 10?
Yep.
Probably a 7, which I hate to admit. This guy always breaks.
Let me preface. A 1 is 2014 Travis Wood, and a 10 is 2013 Travis Wood.
Yeah, it's still a 7. I think he could. He's definitely not the 2014 Travis Wood. I think that was unfortunate, but we have to kind of temper our expectations a little bit and kind of admit that everything went right for him in 2013. And that's just not going to happen. He's the kind of pitcher that even when everything's going right, he's going to have some bad days.
Yep. Mal?
And Mal warned me last year and I didn't listen, but that's what happened.
I'm going to go 6 on Travis Wood. Yeah, I don't think he's 2014 Travis Wood either, but I also think that 2013 was probably an outlier as well. I think he's going to put in a boringly solid year.
Sounds good. So let's go deeper and deeper here, down into the handful of percent owned. We have Jared Cozart, who is 3% owned, and Jesse Chavez, who is also 3% owned, and let's throw Kyle Loesch in that bucket too. He's 3% owned. If you could pick one of these three guys up in a 14 or 15 team mixed league, who would it be, Mike?
Man, I Cozart. Who is the second guy? Cozart, Loesch, and who?
Jesse Chavez.
Chavez. I'd probably go Cozart just because I like the park. He's a ground ball guy. He's got Gordon Hecheverria behind him. I think that's a big plus. You're not going to get the strikeouts, but I think that he's a – one of the reasons I targeted him was that reason. I like the defense behind him. I like the ground ball profile. I'm going to go with Cozart.
I'm also definitely going to go with Cozart. Because also to add on to that, I'm not a big long term Jesse Chavez fan. I wouldn't depend on that guy to give me a full slate of starts. And I mean, Kyle Loesch is just kind of hanging on at this point, I think. So
yeah, I'm with you guys on Cozart. No need to dig too much deeper on that. We're just going to do these last couple of guys really quickly. Just say thumbs up, thumbs down, or no comment when I throw out a couple of these names. Vance Worley, 1.9% owned. Mike?
He probably should be higher, although he's a player I would think I was more excited about coming into the season. And now that I've watched him during the season, I kind of see some of the flaws you were talking about, Brett. He's fine. The park helps. The coaching, as we know, in Pittsburgh with Ray Sears certainly helps. I guess I'll go thumbs up.
Now?
I'll go thumbs down because I don't want it. But he should probably be owned a little bit more than 1.9%. But I'm not about it.
Okay. Jason Marquis, 1.8% owned. Mike?
Thumbs down. I no.
That's all.
I don't want it. I just no. I don't want him at all.
Okay. Mal, I know what you're going to say. Now, interesting point, and we talked a little bit about this before. When you get into this range, AJ Ramos is owned in 1.5% of leagues. If you're in a 15-team mixed, would you rather have AJ Ramos or any of the pitchers that we've talked about over the last four or five names?
Ooh, probably not over Cozart, but... He's up there. I think I would probably take a flyer on Ramos. Up to Cozart.
I'm going to make a bold prediction and say that Ramos is going to be closing within a month, so I'm going to say yes.
All right. Then working even further down, Kyle Lobstein, 1.2% owned. No, we don't need to do that, right?
No, I don't think so.
We could do a lot of these, but it's going to lead to this laughter, and you know, I can't believe we play in leagues this deep.
No, because I can already see myself picking up Kyle Lobstein at some point in the league, because I know it's going to happen. That's why I'm laughing. Not that the suggestion is ridiculous.
What kind of leagues are you in now?
I'm in 20-team leagues, man. It's bad.
It's like only, but yeah, it's a mix for people who want to play with everybody. Only for people who want to play with everybody, I should say.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we've gone through enough. Nobody wants to hear what will happen if I say Jeremy Hellickson. So I think we've covered some good names, and we'll see if any of these guys get picked up. In a lot of leagues next week. So on that note, I think we'll call it a night. What do you guys think?
It's a good idea.
I think that's fine. I think we covered a lot of good ground here.
All right. Plow through it, Mal?
Let's plow through it.
All right. Thank you for listening. This has been episode 52 of Flag Fly Forever. You can read all of us at baseballperspectives.com. You should read of all of us at baseballperspectives.com. Go sign up for a premium membership today. Check out all our stuff, fantasy prospect side, all the writers you know and love. Sam Miller. Just subscribe for Sam. Seriously.
Yeah, good.
But be a super premium member and you will get access to the Bat Signal. Bat Signal is our fantasy answering service. You send us a question, we will answer it generally within about 12 hours, and with not a ton of snark, unless Craig answers your question, in which case you may get more snark than you planned for. But he will always answer it anyway, because he's a gentleman. We are, again, partnering this year with DraftKings, and there's going to be some fun announcements soon about playing DFS with members of the BP staff. So hopefully by the time you listen to us next, that will be all worked out and announced and you'll be able to do such things. Other than that, I have been Brett, Mike has been Mike, Mao has been Mao, and this is it. See you next week.
Farewell.